Well, hello again, TGP. It's Monday, March 14th, 2022. This is In the Know, episode 34. Let me go through a few announcements with you, and then we'll jump into a little bit of sermon recap. As we've said a number of times, March the 20th is a big day. We have a family meeting right after service, and we're going to vote on replacing the elder selection appendix in the guiding documents. And then that evening at 5, we'll have our Sunday evening service. March the 25th is Free Pizza Friday at 6 p.m. in the church building. April 1st and 2nd is the IF Women's Gathering. It's going to be at First Baptist Dry Prong. And there will be food provided. You can contact Allison Hinsgens for more information. And then April the 6th, Kids Choir is going to start up. You can contact Dr. Kate Rawls if you are wanting to be involved in that. Okay. Let's talk about puny, yucky gods. I am a fan of the Avengers movies. One of the funniest scenes to me comes in the movie The Avengers from 2012. Loki is found by the Hulk and is tackled into a building. And as the Hulk is walking toward him to continue doing battle against him, Loki stands up and shouts, "Enough! You are all of you beneath me. I am a god, you dull creature, and I will not be bullied by," and never finishes the sentence, because Hulk drags him off his feet by his leg and proceeds to bash him back and forth on the ground. And the final hit leaves Loki impressed into the concrete floor, and with a dazed look on his face. And as he walks away, Hulk says, "Puny God." It's excellent. If you want to see that scene, you can view it on YouTube at the link that I provided in the newsletter. I do believe that would be the first time I've ever linked an Avengers movie clip in the newsletter. But it's funny. And I feel like that's sort of what's going on in Genesis 31. There are times in the story of Scripture that the biblical authors make fun of foreign false gods that the nations worship. At times, the mockery is more subtle, kind of like this one. And at times, it's just right there for everyone to see. Think Dagon on the ground in his own temple, shattered to pieces in front of the Ark of the Covenant. But all of it is meant to poke fun at the notion of idolatry. Yes, there is a sense in which the people of God should pity and weep over those who are trapped in the worship of false gods. That is absolutely true. But where the Bible laughs and pokes fun at the absurdity of these things, we can do the same. And to some degree, we should do the same. I'm not saying you should walk into a Hindu temple and just start making fun of those who are there. I think there's a better way to engage them evangelistically. But when we're talking about how silly it is that people would chop a tree down, they would cook their meal over half of it, they would carve half of it into an idol and carry it and set it in place and then bow down to it and say, "You've saved me." Like, that's absurd. And where the Bible laughs at that, we can have a holy laughter. And yesterday, Justin picked up on that theme in this text of Genesis 31. Just think of the manifold ways that this text displays Yahweh as stronger and greater than these little impotent household deities. Number one, Yahweh is everywhere. He is able to provide for and protect Jacob, not just in Canaan, Canaan, but in Paddan Aram and everywhere else. There's nowhere Jacob could go that Yahweh could not fulfill his gracious purposes to him. Contrast that with the household gods that can be concealed easily in one location, inside a tent, and underneath one woman, so that the only place Laban didn't get to search is the one place they were. Puny gods. And think about, as Justin said, how these gods are silent and cannot let Laban know their location versus Yahweh's terrifying confrontation with Laban the night before that totally alters his approach to the whole situation. Puny gods. Then consider how impotent and powerless these gods really were. They couldn't keep themselves from being stolen, right? They were fashioned, carried to their resting spot, set in place, reset if they were ever accidentally knocked over, and had to be rescued from thieves, although they weren't, but they had to be rescued from thieves because they are powerless to do anything other than sit there. They have no power over Rachel who stole them. How much less can they do anything for their worshipers? Puny gods. Gods that can be stolen, hidden, and silenced are not gods at all. They are simply little blocks of wood. But our God is the one true living God, and He does all that He pleases. As an additional note, imagine hearing this story for the first time as an Israelite in the wilderness who has recently received the law. Now, the law talks about the ritual uncleanness associated with the menstrual cycle. So whether Rachel was actually on her period or not, there is here a comical association with ritual impurity and the worship of false gods. This is as close to potty humor as the Bible gets. Like, there are a couple of places where it gets close like that, and this is kind of one of them. They were under her at perhaps the worst possible moment for them to be under her, if this wasn't just a lie and this was indeed what was happening. And they ended up and couldn't keep her uncleanness off of them. So they ended up with that on them and couldn't keep it off of themselves. Idolatry is a defilement in itself, but there is a further defiling and desecrating of that which is already defiled here. And so it's just this connection between that uncleanness and even to some degree like the idea of death because of blood being spilled, right, with these idols that are hidden beneath her. So not only does the story show how these false gods are puny, but it also would have you think they're yucky. That's disgusting. I really believe this would have been one of those times. I mean, you just imagine the hundreds of thousands of people who are there in the wilderness listening to this read and or going over this, how this would have just been side-splittingly funny to them. I mean, you're there in the wilderness. You've just watched how Yahweh has demonstrated his power over Pharaoh and all the false gods of Egypt. And then you look back on this story of these silly, superstitious, false idols and this impure menstrual discharge that's getting on them. And it's a funny thing because you're like that would never happen to the God that we serve. And it's this lighthearted laughter at how silly and absurd humanity is apart from God, how foolish that is. And so what I would say is if that would evoke laughter from the people of Israel who witnessed Yahweh's power over Pharaoh, like how much more should it evoke holy laughter from Christians who have witnessed the risen Christ and his defeat of death and sin? Like, behold the absolute ridiculous, comical, and pitiable worship of false gods, and bow your knee before the true God. Worship Him only, serve Him only, fear Him only, and love Him alone. I want to talk at the end here about fear for just a second. I want to repeat Dr. Langford's words about fear. He says, fear causes us to say and do things that are illogical, irresponsible, and downright incompatible with God's character. He also made a point that we've seen over and over. When the people of God act out of fear, they often bring about the very thing they were seeking to avoid, the very thing they were afraid of. Remember how Abraham, because he feared Pharaoh and later Abimelech, would take his wife and would kill him, he actually ended up having her taken from him. Think back also on how the people at Babel wanted to build something to make a name for themselves so that they could avoid being scattered abroad or dispersed among the nations, Genesis 11:4. And then through their unbelief, they got exactly that, Genesis 11:8. I could go on with other examples, but I've essentially kind of created my own term, or at least as far as I know, it's my own term to describe this phenomenon, the ironic opposites of unbelief. When the people of God act in unbelief, they ironically get the opposite of what they're trying to achieve. In fact, they often get the very thing they intended to avoid. So the opposite of what they desire, the opposite of what they are after is what they get. The Babel builders try to make a name for themselves in unbelief and ironically get humbled. They get the opposite of what they were seeking. They tried to avoid being scattered, and ironically, they got the opposite of that. They got scattered. They got the thing they were afraid of. Abraham didn't want Sarai to end up in Pharaoh's harem, so he acted in unbelief, and because of his unbelief, she did end up in his harem. When we are faced with various situations, the people of God have a choice. Will we fearfully, unbelievingly take matters into our own hands, or will we continue to trust in God and His good character to bring about His kind, gracious purposes and be faithful to His promises? May we not act in fear and do those things which are illogical, irresponsible, and downright incompatible with God's character. If God is truly who He says He is, then the most logical and responsible thing is faith that is consistent with the character of an all-powerful, all-good, all-wise, all-knowing, and all-present God. I pray that you act in faith rather than fear today. Have a great week. I love you, people.